Here lately, I've been doing some studying about God's creation, the universe. As part of the internet writing program, I've been writing some articles related to creation of the universe as a proof of God. As a matter of fact, one of them is out already on the internet. Do you believe in miracles? But in preparing those articles, quite a lot of research to get into the what scientists have learned and how that fits in with the our beliefs of a great God who created all this. And we look around at all the greatness that we see in not just the world, but in the whole universe. It makes me think, well, what is the greatest thing that God did, that He created? And the more I think about it, the more I think that perhaps the greatest thing that He created is the 4 pounds or so of mass that each of you are carrying around in your head, the human brain. You know, it is a masterpiece of design, like nothing else. You know, lots of creatures have brains. No creature has a brain like the human mind. Now, there are several ways that we can begin to look at the human brain, that and we can learn a lot from science about that, and that's going to be the general subject of my sermon today. We're going to be looking at the brain, how the brain functions, how we think. There are several ways that you can look at the brain. One is the probably familiar with the left brain, right brain kind of approach to looking at the brain. You know, the people, psychologists and so forth that studied the brain have looked at it from that perspective. The left brain being the analytical, the logical part of the brain. The right brain being the creativity, the artistic side of the brain. And certainly there are those kinds of characteristics. In more recent years, it seems scientists beginning to include it's not so much that this is something that's in one side of the brain, and there's something else on the other side of the brain. There's so many cross interconnections that it is a brain that contains all of these things. The analytical, the logical thinking, the creativity, all of these things are there. So that's one way of looking at the human mind. Another way is to look at it from a conscious, subconscious point of view. You know, there's the conscious brain that we know, and then there's this subconscious part that seems to be going on deep down that we have little or no recognition of or understanding of. So people have looked at that as a study of the brain. Another thing that people have done in studying the brain, they've looked at it from the idea of influences on the brain. What kind of things influence the brain? For example, exercise, which scientists believe improves memory, for example. Internet use, scientists have begun to believe that inhibits memory in recent years. Meditation, which improves brain function. You know, it could go on and on, and science will study these kinds of things. How do you improve the brain? What inhibits the operation of the brain? So there's that way of looking at the brain. Then some people simply look at it from a idea of why do things happen. For example, why are people so intuitively good at grammar, yet have only an intuitive feel for the principles of probability, for example. Now think about it. By 4 years old, most little children are pretty much there as far as grammar is concerned. They don't very often mix subject and verb and get, they have all these kinds of things. They have grammar down. In fact, I've noticed in my 4-year-old grandchildren, once they get to about 4 or 5, they're really good, and then they seem to regress. They get worse again. But you know, at that young an age, how does the brain do that? You know, yet at the same time, these same little children have no concept of the probability of things happening. It's just a completely different area. So people like to look at those kinds of questions. And, well, how does this work? How does this go on in the brain? You know, we... the thing is, the brain works in a fantastic way, and yet we make mistakes. We make errors. Our brain is programmed to do marvelous things, and yet sometimes it doesn't work too well, it seems, for us. Sometimes we ask ourselves as we hit ourselves on the forehead, why did I do that? Why did I do that? Now, I want to take a look at this next slide up here as we talk about the brain a little bit. And it's pretty obvious here. There's four boxes, the letters there on the left, the numbers on the right. I think most of you, unless you are just barely learning to read, immediately just pick up on the letters on the right, the numbers on the left. You know, it just happens. The brain just immediately picks that up. No questions, no problems there, no ambiguities. It's the way our brain works. Or does it? Are there any ambiguities in what you're looking at? Well, I want you to look at what I've got circled here. I want you to look at what's circled here. Now, if you'll notice, on the left, you read that as a B. But on the right, you read that exact same thing as a 13. Why did you do that? Why didn't you read the left side, A13C, and the right side, 12B14? Now, I dare say that every one of you, when you were looking at this slide initially, read it ABC and 12, 13, 14, or either 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4, however you happen to look at it. I dare say none of you read it as A13C, did you? Why not? It's pretty obvious now that you could read that B as a 1-3, or you could read it as a B. Why not? Why did your brain react the way it did? And you didn't even know it, did you? Did your brain say, "No, wait a minute, something's wrong with that picture. Something's wrong, I've got to figure it out," and no. Didn't even think about it, did you? Just looked at it and you saw what you saw. At least you think you saw what you saw. You know, that's kind of a scary thing about the way our brain works when we kind of do little tests like this and we see how we react to things. Your brain is making decisions, judgments, choices of which you are seen to be completely unaware. Your brain made the judgment that on the left, that thing's a B. And you were completely unaware that it made that judgment when there was an option. So your brain is making judgments, decisions, choices instantly. And the scary part is they could be wrong. Could be wrong. So how do we deal with that? How do we deal with that? And that's what I want to talk about today. And as you might surmise, and your brain will probably not be surprised with this, I probably won't finish this topic today, but hopefully we'll get well into it. what I want to address here is how can we understand our errors in judgment, in choice, and improve our decision-making? How can we do that? Or can we? You know, can we do that? Or is it possible that God has given us a brain that in certain aspects we can't control at all? and yet he holds us responsible for wrong decisions? Could that be possible? Well, I don't think so. But can scientists help us understand our errors in judgment and choice? Can we learn something from what scientists have learned about the brain? Can it lead to improved decision-making as we look at what science can tell us about the way the human brain works and how it functions? Okay, something was just flashed on the screen. Very brief amount of time. Anybody recognize who that individual was? Who was it? A little audience interaction here. Who was it? John McCain. Another question. What kind of mood would you describe as depicted by his facial expression? Angry. How did you know that? I asked Lowell to flash that on for about 3 seconds. So almost instantly, you saw that shot on the screen. It went off. And instantly, your brain recognized an angry face. For many of you who are familiar with Senator McCain, you recognized that it was Senator John McCain. How did your brain do that? How did it know instantly that it was an angry face? Why didn't it kind of get into a mode of saying, well, let's see, there's lots of different expressions. Was it anger? Could it have been sorrow? Could it have been unhappiness? You could have gone through a list of things and said, it looks more like anger. But your brain did not do that. Your mind did not do that at all. You instantly surmised it was an angry John McCain. How does that work? How does it work? Well, the way that I'm going to propose that we look at the human mind today is a little bit different from the ways I've listed it. People have looked at it. We'll look at what we call, first of all, there's two systems at work within our minds. And one I'm going to refer to by the name the intuitive system. And you got a good example of the intuitive system when the angry John McCain was flashed onto the screen and you immediately recognized that it was an angry person, and most of you probably recognized it was John McCain. So that's the intuitive system. It just happens. It just pops into your mind. There's no long thought out reasoning process, no evaluating, could it be this, could it be that. You just know. You just know. And that's what the intuitive system is all about. It's about recognizing an angry man when it's flashed. It's impulsive. It's impulsive, Lowell. We had something worked out there that didn't work very well. When I said it was impulsive, Lowell was supposed to bang on that thing, and everybody would then look. Leaving with my warning, of course, I gave you a direction to look at. But if, theoretically, Lowell had gotten my cue and had banged on that, what would have happened? Would you have looked that way towards the noise, or would you have looked towards the doors over here? No. Well, how did you know? How did your brain know immediately that the noise came from over there? You know, that's our intuitive system. You know, it just reacts to a sudden sound. We kind of know where it comes from, unless it's some kind of strange acoustical setup that fools us. We know which direction a sudden sound comes from. We react to it instantaneously. You know, our intuitive system of our mind takes over in emergencies. simple things. This, you know, the kind of game, at least in my generation, kids used to play. You have a ball in your hand. You throw it at somebody, you say, think fast. And they react. How does the brain react that fast to catch a ball that somebody surprisingly tosses at you all of a sudden? Or how do you do things like complete the phrase, bread and... Didn't butter immediately come to mind? Yeah. Something else might have come to mind. Without taking a poll, I dare say probably 90% of everybody in here thought bread and butter. But what about the answer to 3 plus 3? Did you stop and start counting? Let's see, 3 plus 3. Yeah, that's 6. Anybody do that? Well, maybe a 3-year-old might have. I'm trying to figure out, you know, so just somebody just learning a little arithmetic. But all of you adults didn't. It just popped into your mind immediately. That's the intuitive brain at work. What's the capital of France? I suspect that for most of you, Paris popped into your mind. That's our intuitive brain. You know, it's interesting when we think about these kind of things that just happen. It just seems to happen, almost like magic, doesn't it? That some of these traits we share with other animals. You know, there's certain things, you know, sudden fear, danger, the fight or flight kind of thing. You know, there's a certain part of our brain there that makes us aware of our surroundings, sensing fear, these sorts of things that we share with animals. Yet others are learned and become intuitive. Initially, they're not, but they become intuitive. You know, things like reading, social skills, athletic responses, the capital of France, you know, all these kinds of things become initially not at the tip of our fingers, but as we mature, these things become intuitive. They just pop into our minds. You know, we're excellent at integrating, particularly the intuitive mind is excellent at integrating all the information about one specific thing. Now, take my favorite sport, basketball. When LeBron James, though you don't follow basketball, most people think he's the best player in the world right now. When LeBron James is dribbling a basketball down the court, does his mind work like this? I'm dribbling the ball down. Eh, let's see. I've got a man over here. I've got a man there. I've got a man there. Oh, yeah, there's Dwayne Wade over there. I think I'll just dribble over here to my left. And, yep, he's cutting across. Probably be a good idea to throw him a behind-the-back pass. I think I'll do that. Throw him behind-the-back pass. Yep, he caught it. And now he's cutting across. I think I'll cut behind him. And he'll either shoot or he'll drop it off to me, and then I'll shoot. And if he shoots, I'll be hitting to the basket. Maybe I can get the rebound if he misses. That's a good plan. I think I'll do that. Is that the way a good basketball player operates? A good athlete in any sport operates? They just do it. It just comes to their minds, and they, you know, it just happens. And sometimes you're like, how did that happen? Why did I do that? You know, you're playing a sport or something, and you do some move that you... I didn't even know I had that move. You know, that kind of thing. That is our intuitive mind. Now, obviously, people like LeBron James were not born that way. You know, little LeBron, when he was playing basketball in grammar school, couldn't do the things he does now intuitively. He had to learn them. So it's something that's kind of, you might say, passed on from a separate system. You know, there's another system hiding in there that we do think through. But that can be converted into intuitive actions or reactions to things. All right, now I'm going to show you another slide here. I want you to view this as a single column. Single column, and if you look at this column, it is you could look at it as two columns. I want you to view it as one column, with some of the words shifted a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. So I'm going to ask you to do a couple of things with this column in just a minute. But when I ask you to do that, I'm going to ask you to start from the top and go down, like left, left, right, 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 left, left, right. Just take it as one column, and I want you to go down reading each of the words. First of all, I want you to do this. I want you to start from the top, mentally. You don't do it out loud now. Just do it in your own mind. Start from the top and look at each word. And if the first letter of that word is uppercase, think upper. And if it's a lower, if the first letter of the word is lowercase, think lower. And just go upper or lower as you go down. Just do that mentally. I'll give you about 5-10 seconds here to go down. That should have been pretty easy. You know, you zip right through that, right? Pretty intuitive. You know what an upper and lowercase letter, and you go down. But now I want you to do the same thing. Start at the top and go down. But this time, as you look at each word, I want you to say left or right, indicating whether that word is shifted to the left or to the right. Ready? Go. Okay, did you finish the list as fast as you did with the upper and lower case? Something happened there, didn't it? There was some ambiguity because in some of those cases, the word says right, but it's on the left. And your intuitive system is picking up an ambiguity there that it doesn't quite know how to handle until another part of the brain kicks in, the analytical part of the brain. So that's what I want to talk about. You know, we've talked about the intuitive part of the brain. It just seems to happen. But then there's the analytical part of the brain. The analytical part of the brain, you know, that requires attention and is disrupted when attention is drawn away. You know, you have to really, that's the thinking part. That's what we think of as the brain usually. We just think, it's the analytical, it's the logical, it's the thinking part of the brain. But it's mental work. Sometimes you feel like you're really thinking about things, and man, that's work. And it's mental work. It's deliberate, and it requires effort. It's like, what is 21 times 38? Anybody shout that out? It's 798. But that's not something that you're going to pop out like 3 plus 3. How come 21 times 38 doesn't just pop out just this quickly? That's not intuitive. That takes some mental effort. Probably either fishing out a calculator or sitting down and actually performing the multiplication to come up with an answer. Now, that's the analytical part of our brain, the analytical system. Another example of the analytical system is if you take a phrase and are asked, say, to count the number of times an A, the letter A, appears in that passage. Now, that's not something that just pops in your head. That's something you have to actually do some analysis on. Matter of fact, let's go to our blank slide here. I'm going to ask you to do something like that. In a minute, I'm going to flash up on the screen a passage. Actually, it's going to be a scripture. And I'm going to ask you to count how many times the letter A appears in that passage. All right, when I say go, on your mark, get set, go. Okay, let's go to the next slide here while I ask you some questions about that. How many A's were in that passage? How many? 5, 7, 9. Any other choices? 8, 10, 4. Unless I miscounted, there are 9. See, that took some focus, didn't it? That took some focus, and I made it, perhaps, I think I made it a little bit harder because I had Lowell start flashing on some distractions right in the middle of it. Did those different little images popping up kind of mess anybody up? Did it distract you? Well, see, that's our analytical system at work. You're busy counting and looking and analyzing, and it's a slow process. And you can be distracted from it easily, as I suspect some of you were when all these little things started popping up. That's our analytical system. It's an interesting system compared to the intuitive system in that it can follow rules, compare objects on several attributes, and make choices among options. See, our analytical system starts... Now, we got a bunch of young people sitting back there. They're probably thinking about boyfriends, girlfriends, that sort of thing. Intuitively, they might say, boy, he or she is hot. That's intuitive. But analytically, they might say, oh, this person is good looking. He's good in conversation. He's kind. You can go through a list of things analytically. Or you can just say, oh, he or she is hot. Yeah, so both systems can kind of kick in there, but it's the analytical system that can look at a lot of different options, combine things, and help you draw conclusions. Now, the analytical system also is an intense focusing and can make you effectively blind. I don't know whether it happened to any of you here, but some people... would be counting those letter A's would be so focused they didn't even see all those little things popping up. There's a famous test called the Invisible Gorilla that's become famous in psychological circles because it's they show people a video of a basketball game and ask them to count the dribbles that take place. And during the process of them counting the dribbles, they have a gorilla float across the screen. It takes about 10 seconds for it to float across the screen. And when they do these tests consistently, about half the people did not see the gorilla. They were so busy counting the dribbles that their mind just completely did not see the gorilla. And it's amazing when you think about it. But that's our analytical system. It can get very, very focused. You know, so focused on the tree, it never sees the forest, kind of thing. Our analytical system is one that overcomes our intuitions, our impulses of the intuitive system. You know, we get these things pop into our mind, and then our analytical system kind of kicks in and gives us a little more depth, you might say. All right, now there's an interaction between the two systems. These two systems interacting constantly. Actually, it's actually a misnomer to even call them two systems. It's our brain. It's simply our brain. And these are some of the characteristics, but it's... We can talk about it in terms of two set systems as a good analogy, a good metaphor, to understand the workings of the brain, and particularly to understand it in terms of making better decisions, making better judgments. But how these two systems interact, they are both active. When you're awake, they're both running. But it's interesting, the intuitive system runs automatically, and pretty much always seems to be at high speed. You're constantly drawing intuitive conclusions, making intuitive judgments. It just happens. Your intuitive mind is constantly aware of everything around you, is looking around, checking things out, and seeing if everything's normal. And if something abnormal happens, that intuitive side, part of the brain, kind of wakes up the analytical side. And the analytical side starts saying, well, is this really something to be analyzed or not? You know, one way that it's been described is that the intuitive part of the mind is just simply runs automatically. The analytical part of the mind is kind of lazy. It mostly walks. It sometimes jogs, and it occasionally sprints. Kind of a good comparison between the two. Now, the intuitive system generates impressions, intuitions, intentions, and feelings, which are suggestions for the analytical part of the mind. The analytical system kicks in when something doesn't fit intuitively. For example, you hear a cat meow. Intuitively, you know it's a cat, and you don't think. If you see a cat bark, all of a sudden your analytical mind takes over because that's not normal. What's going on? You know, you start going through some more deep thinking. Why is a cat barking? Or if you see a lamp suddenly jump up off the table, you know, that's not intuitive at all. You know, that's when the analytical part of the mind often kicks in. Now, one of the interesting things here, though, is that some analytical system items can be shifted into the intuitive. Matter of fact, that's what maturing is all about. Now, you take a simple thing as saying the ABCs. Most everybody can run through the ABCs intuitively. But you couldn't as a 2-year-old, 3-year-old maybe. You had to analytically learn it, and then it's transferred into the intuitive system. So part of maturing is taking things that we first analytically come to understand until they become second nature to us, they become intuitive. So there's an interchange there between these two systems. Now, analytical system continuously monitors our own behavior. You know, it's in a monitoring stage there. And it takes over when things get difficult. You know, we basically run on intuition, intuitive mind is working most of all. But when things get hard, something unusual happens, we have a difficult choice to make, something like now our analytical mind kicks in. But like I said, it's not like there's one part here, there's two different brains in operation. It's a brain. But it's showing these two different types of characteristics. You know, it's an integrated brain, but it seems to have two very distinct characteristics that are in play, kind of working with or sometimes seemingly against each other. Now, so what does this imply to us? Now, I spent some time here, by way of long introduction, you might say, in terms of getting into talking about the brain. But what is with this understanding that this is the way the brain reacts so often, now, you know, what does this imply to us? You know, if we're going to go and sin no more, we need to understand how these two systems work and, most importantly, how to use them. You know, sin begins in this mind of ours. Now, the interesting thing about all these things that science has learned about the brain is it seems to fit pretty nicely with the Bible. As a matter of fact, with just the understanding that I've talked about so far of what science sees about how our mind operates and these two intuitive and this analytical system and so forth, a lot of things in the Scripture make even more sense. For example, turn to James 1 and verse 13. James 1 and verse 13. Don't have much slides left, so we're going to be looking at the Bible from now on, and I didn't put all those on the screen, so James 1 and verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But let each one who is tempted, when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed, then when the desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. So here's a process of moving into sin that begins with temptation. And we know Satan is a great tempter. A temptation occurs. What part of the brain do you suppose reacts initially to a temptation? More than likely the intuitive part, wouldn't you think? So there's some intuitive thing that happens, and unless the analytical mind kicks in, you got a problem. And that's from this perspective that we're looking at here of the brain. This scripture makes a lot of sense, because there's this initial intuitive reaction. And if you just go on that intuitive, in other words, if your analytical brain doesn't kick in and you start analyzing the situation, before you know it, you're knee-deep in sin. Or, for example, look over at Matthew 5 and verse 27. Not part of the Sermon on the Mount here, so these passages are fairly familiar. Matthew 5 and verse 27. You have heard that it was said of to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery in her heart. And of course, when the Bible talks about the heart, is usually not referring to that thing that's beating inside us, but more to our mind, the center of our thinking. And so what the message is here is that unless your analytical system has trained your intuitive system in things like this, you got problems. You got problems. You know, it implies that one of the main uses of our analytical system is to train and teach our intuitive system how to react. Now, one question scientists like to try to explain is where our intuitive system comes from. Where does it come from? Evolutionists say it evolved. You know, and the whole basis of that is that animals have an intuitive system. We call it instinct. But they don't have the analytical part at all. There's this huge gap between the human mind and any animal mind. And that gap is the analytical system. It's simply not there. Yeah, so you know, this extreme gap makes it hard to believe in evolution by itself without anything else. How could the gap be that large? Why aren't there people that have some analytical qualities and a kind of a spread or animals that have crossed the range? It's not there. It's not there. It's kind of a all or nothing kind of thing. Either you have an analytical mind or you don't. And if you have an analytical mind, you're human. We don't see anything in between. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 1 and verse 6. Colossians 1 and verse 6. And we look at some of these scriptures that are, again, are some familiar scriptures here. I said verse 6, Colossians 1, verse 16, what I meant to say. Colossians 1:16, for by him all things were created that are in the heavens and that are on earth. Everything's created, and that includes us and our human minds. Visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. Visible and invisible. And our intuitive mind is kind of invisible, isn't it? Our analytical mind is more visible to us. We see it, we understand it better, you might say, than our intuitive mind. Now, you know, a little baby hears a loud noise. What does the baby do? He cries. Why? Who taught it that? Who taught a newborn baby to suddenly start crying because it hears a loud noise? Where does that come from? It seems to have been born with certain, like animals, born with certain intuitive things. But you were all once babies once. Did any of you start crying when you heard the loud noise that Lowell made? I didn't hear any babies cry either, any little children cry. Something's happened to your intuitive system, hasn't it? It's changed. It's been trained. It's been trained by your analytical system to react differently. Okay, now I want to give you some points here on improving judgment as it relates to these two parts of our brain. And the first point is this. The intuitive system can be modified through experience and training. And so here's the problem that we face. We've been trained from the time we were born by an imperfect trainer. So our intuitive system has learned some good things, but it's learned some bad things. Now, that's the basic problem. Let's look over at Proverbs. Turn to Proverbs 22, verse 6. Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Yeah, that sounds simple enough. Train him up. What you're doing is basically taking his analytical system and training it in such a way that his intuitive system learns correctly how to thing. Because we can't do without the intuitive system. You know, it's not like the analytical system's good and the intuitive system's bad. They're both good. We can't survive as humans without them. Can't become a part of the God family without both those systems in operation. They're both good, but like anything else, they can be useful, bad or good. You know, so certainly there's a positive effect in the training of our intuitive system. But look over at Hebrews 12 and verse 5. Hebrews 12, and I'm going to read verses 5 through 11 here. Hebrews 12 and verse 5. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. And then Paul here quotes Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges everyone whom he receives. Now, you know, we look at this, oh yeah, that's good about child rearing. Paul's not talking about rearing children here. He's talking about adults. This is not addressing child rearing. This is addressing adults. Verse 7, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? So he's developing an analogy here between raising a child and your relationship with God. Verse 8, but if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? Yeah, we've all been taught. We've all been taught by chastening in one way, shape, or form. But the problem is they taught us some wrong things. So our intuitive system has picked up some bad habits, you might say, along the way. Verse 10, For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. As seemed best to them. Not as seemed best to God, but as seemed best to them. Now, those who have parents who do serve God are going to be better off than people who are raised by parents who are ungodly. But human parents aren't perfect. And so it seemed best to them, but he is for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful nevertheless afterwards. It yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. You see, in terms of our this two aspects of our brain, the intuitive system and the analytical system, if it's trained properly, that's then transferred and becomes intuitive. And so you don't make as many mistakes. Look at 2 Peter 2 and verse 12. But these, like natural brute beasts, made to be caught and destroyed, speak evil of the things they do not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption, and will receive the wages of unrighteousness, as those who count it pleasure to carouse in the daytime, they are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you. And see, this is not talking about, just the world in general. Yes, a rotten place. Our intuitive system just kicks in. The world is rotten. But this is talking about people who are attending in the church, who are a part of the congregation, at least in name, that has problems here. And it says, they are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls. They have a heart trained in covetous practices. Their intuitive system has been wrongly trained. And so it keeps kicking in and getting in the way. So what happens? By adulthood, we have strengths and weaknesses. Our intuitive system has some things right, some things not so right. And it kind of then falls on us as adults to retrain our minds. Now, what about our analytical system? Well, we won't turn there, but in Genesis 1:27, it says that God made us in his image. If we're made in his image, God certainly is analytical. So we, that part is God made also. But let's look over at Psalm 8 and verse 6. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put on all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea. O Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. We sing that hymn, don't we? How could that have happened? How could that have developed if we didn't have an analytical mind? How could we couldn't do that. You know, there's no animal that can say they are charged and rule the beast of the field and so forth. No, it's only humans. You know, God created that analytical mind. But Romans 1, verse 18, let's go over to Romans. Romans 1:18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes were clearly seen, being understood by the things which are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. You know, in other words, he gave us this rational, analytical, reasoning brain. And so we don't have an excuse. If we were a dumb animal, as they say, we'd have an excuse. He gave us something else. Verse 21, because although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Futile in their thoughts. Their analytical mind didn't work right. And then that pushed right into the intuitive part of the mind. Verse 23, and changed the glory of God, the glory of the incorruptible God, into an image made with corruptible hands, birds, four-legged beasts, creeping things. So God made them both, and they're supposed to work together for our good. But what, if anything, you know, instead of evolving, it kind of seems like we've devolved, doesn't it? From what God originally made us and so forth intended, we've devolved from that, not evolved. Evolutionists may have it completely backwards, that we're devolving. Now, that brings me to point two here, which I want to make. Make sure your mind is clear before making judgments or decisions. Make sure your mind is clear before making judgments and decisions. Why? Because your analytical mind can get distracted. I think you probably saw some of that distraction back when you were counting the letter A's and those little dots and things were popping up. Our analytical mind can get distracted. It's called being cognitively busy. You know, cognition is just applies to the thinking that goes on in our brain. If we get too busy, having your mind occupied with one thing while trying to do something else, multitasking, we call it. But that can be a problem. People who are cognitively busy are more likely to make poor choices or to take ill-advised action, especially when temptation arises. Let me give you an example. Psychiatrists love to do these little tests, and since most of them are college professors, they do it on students. They test students. So here was the test that they run. They gave a group of students, one individually, a set of seven numbers. They said, your job is to memorize these seven numbers and don't forget them for any reason. No matter what distractions happen, no matter what occurs, remember these numbers. And they usually have some little reward if they successfully do. Presumably, what was the purpose of the test? Of course, it never is. All right, so individual got given these numbers, and he's concentrating. Got to remember these seven. Got to remember these seven numbers. He's concentrating on these seven numbers. And then one of the experimenters will ask him, well, which do you prefer, a healthy salad or a piece of chocolate cake? He's remembering the numbers, and okay, I'll have the cake. But he's concentrating on the numbers. So they ran that with a group of students. And then they took a group of students. They didn't tell them to memorize any numbers or concentrate. They said, just had a group of students. That was the control group. Said, which do you prefer, a healthy salad or a really thick piece of chocolate cake, you know, really, that sort of thing. And what they found out was this. The people who did not have something occupying the analytical part of the brain chose the healthy alternative significantly more often than the people that had those seven numbers in their head and were just, you know, intuitively answering the question while they were really focusing on the numbers. So because they were intuitively busy on one thing, they made a different decision. And not all of them, but it was a significant statistical difference between the two groups. See, so being cognitively busy on one thing can be a huge problem. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. Now, this is talking about the husband-wife relationship here. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves in fasting and prayer, and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, so there's the passage, and so what is it talking about here? It's talking about marriage problems between a husband and wife that have become severe enough that there's kind of a wall there. There's a separation, not of one leaving the other, but emotionally and mentally and even physically, there's a separation there. Now, what happens in those kind of situations? Everybody that's married has experienced situations where there's marriage problems. I'm not talking about just little things, but some serious marriage problems from time to time. Now, what's your analytical part of your brain doing during those situations? It's focusing on the problems, aren't they? Your mind's focusing on the problems. You know, you're distracted. Everything else is a distraction because you're dealing with some serious problems. And when you're preoccupied with a problem, then you're likely to make bad decisions in other things. And isn't that what that's saying here? Because the latter part of verse 5 here, because of your lack of self-control. And you're focusing on one thing, your guard is going to be dropped somewhere else. That's the way the analytical part of your mind works. It can focus on one thing, but when it does, it's not focusing on other things, and your judgment can be altered. So the Bible certainly agrees with science. That's what science has learned on this. Matthew 16 and verse 5. Matthew 16 and verse 5. It seems like a kind of a minor thing to be recorded in the Bible here. In verse 5 of Matthew 16, now when the disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, "Take heed, beware of the leavening of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "Is it because we have forgot to take bread?" Now, what were the disciples focusing on here? It was getting close to mealtime, and they had forgotten the food. And the Bible doesn't give much detail here, but you can almost sense. They're walking along, some of the disciples kind of at the back. "Did you bring the food?" "No, didn't. I thought you had it." "No, didn't you got it?" You know, they're kind of back and forth. "What happened to the food?" "We don't have the food." And all of a sudden, this is kind of going on in the background, presumably out of Christ's hearing, more than likely. And then Christ makes this statement, and they say, "Does he know? He already knows we've forgotten the food." See their reaction. They were focusing on one thing, and the message Christ was saying went completely over their head. But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread?" See, there's something going on there. Their analytical mind was fastened onto, "Need something to eat." Christ was talking to them about weighty spiritual matters.
And they didn't get it. It passed right over their head. And then he says, do you not yet understand or remember the five loaves? And he goes on and says, look, when we need food, hasn't it come? So why in the world are you focused on that? Is basically what he's asking there. You see the question there. Go back to Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon, or God and riches would be another way to translate that. Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on it. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? See, Christ, they had heard this sermon earlier. They were still worried about food. Now, you know, you look at the translation here, and you're familiar with the scripture. It doesn't mean just forget about it. Just sit back on your haunches, and the food's going to pop up. It means don't get so concerned. Don't have that anxious. Don't let your analytical system get so focused on that that you just get distracted from the important things. Why? Because when your mind gets focused on one thing, it doesn't make as good adjustments on the other things. Well, that's what scientists tell us, is the way the mind works. That's what the Bible tells us, the way the mind works. And that brings us to my third point here, and the last point today. Recognize that an effort of will or self-control is tiring and can reduce your effort when the next challenge comes along. Using your analytical system is hard work. Matter of fact, it kind of appears our analytical system is lazy. Because it likes to kind of let the tuition take control of things, and every now and then there's a problem, okay, I'll do some work here, I'll solve this problem, I'll carry out this long division, this multiplication, I'll do some work from time to time. But it's not fun, and I don't really like to do it. So intuition, keep things in order for me here. You know, that's kind of the way it seems to be working. Galatians 6:9. Again, I'm looking at some familiar scriptures, but looking at them in this context. Galatians 6 and verse 9. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. There is a danger of growing weary, because doing good requires the analytical mind to work. It requires the analytical mind to train the intuitive mind, be watching over that intuitive mind. A lot of work involved there. We won't turn there, but referring back to Exodus 18, verses 13 through 23. In that passage, Moses is getting weary of well-doing. Every day, from morning to night, Moses is sitting out there as a judge. And the people come by with all their little problems, and he listens to the case. He rules in favor of this or that, tells them what to do. He's doing that from morning to night. Moses' father-in-law comes up and says, what are you doing? You can't keep doing that. You're going to wear yourself out. It's not going to work. And he said, look, train some people to handle this situation. You oversee them, but you take care of the big problems. Let them take care of a lot of the day-to-day problems. Train them. Train them. That was Moses' father-in-law's advice. Moses did it. He took the advice. It worked. It worked. Isn't that kind of like what we need to be doing in ourselves? We need to be training our intuitive mind using our analytical part of our brain to train an intuitive mind. Because if we're constantly relying on the analytical part of our mind, we get tired. Our judgment gets poor. We make mistakes. Now, I will turn to this one, 1 Chronicles 21. This example of David. 1 Chronicles 21 and verse 1. Now Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel. And so David said to Joab, to the leaders and to the leaders of the people, "Go number Israel from Beersheba to Dan. Bring the number of them to me that I may know it." And Joab answered, "May the Lord make his people 100 times more than they are. But my lord the king, are not they all the Lord's servants? Why then does the Lord require this thing? Why should he be a cause of guilt in Israel?" So Joab says, "Don't do this." David says, "I want to take a census. I want to know what I've got." Now, if you look at the previous chapter, what you'll find is that David is waging war. He's waging war with Ammon. He's waging war with Syria. He's waging war with the Philistines. He's waging war with the city of Gath. And it's near the end of David's life. He's getting ready to put together all the materials for the temple so that when he dies, Solomon can build the temple. That's the time frame. So he defeats all these enemies. For the first time since he was cursed by God because of the sin with Bathsheba, there's peace. He's defeated all these enemies. He's gathering the materials to build the temple. You know, so that's the background here. David's analytical system was focused on winning these wars, solving all these problems before his son Solomon took over. And he has all these victories in his grasp right now. His enemies are defeated. I want to count my army. I want to take a census. Now, is it a sin to take censuses? You go back to Numbers 1 and verse 1, God told Moses to take a census. So that didn't seem to be the sin. So what was the sin here? Well, the implications are that it was in David's attitude, an attitude of arrogance in wanting to know how powerful he really was. By numbering all of Israel and knowing, I have the great power, I'm the king, I'm the ruler. That was probably the sin. But it brings out an important point here in looking at these two cases. Moses getting advice from his father-in-law, David getting advice from Joab. One took it, one didn't. And one paid the price, paid a huge price. See, so what this points out to, not only is our judgment impaired when we're focusing on one thing and start making decisions, like taking a census, but the importance of heeding counsel, seeking wisdom from others that you can trust. You know, see, it emphasizes that important. Moses accepted the counsel. David did not in this case, and he paid the price. Because your judgment can become impaired when you're focusing, especially you got problems, you can't focus on anything. And that's when you really need help, really need counseling. You need somebody to be getting you back straight on the track. You know, recognizing the problem is one thing, but how can you deal with it? How do you deal? You know, recognizing, my judgment can be hampered because I'm focusing on one thing. How do you deal with it? Well, I want to go back to Galatians chapter 6 in closing here. Go to Galatians chapter 6. I read Galatians 6:9. I'll go back to Galatians 1:6-1. Galatians 6 and verse 1 here. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourselves, lest you also be tempted. In other words, help. Help. A person needs counsel. Help. Not just the ministry, but other people can do the same thing, can help. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But look at verse 4. But let each one examine his own work. You know, looking at what's going on, analytically looking at what's going on. Examine your own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. You've got to kick in that analytical system, but use it rightly. For each one shall bear his own load. Let him who is taught the word share it in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, so he shall reap. You know, our analytical system is either going to be thinking right or thinking wrong, and that's when the sowing comes in. And we're going to pay the price. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. See, the analytical system can get so focused you start making poor judgment. How do you revive it? Through the Spirit. It's revived through the Spirit. And that's what the whole part of Galatians that leads up to verse 9, let us not grow weary of well doing. Doing the good parts. That strengthens the spirit. That strengthens the analytical mind, which then passes on that to the intuitive mind, and we grow. We grow. Yeah, so the kind of wrapping it up here, the intuitive and the analytical systems of our mind can be both positive and negative factors in affecting our judgment, our decision making, our choices. It can be either positive or negative. Understanding these systems is only one factor in making good judgments. Just knowing how these two systems work, that's not enough. You have to do something else. You have to train those systems. Good judgments are regularly made by people who never give any thought to the process, right? There are people out there make good judgments. Never thought about the mind, the intuitive, the analytical part. Never thought about it. They just make good judgments. However, understanding these systems and how God's Word reinforces this understanding, if we do that, it will lead us to making better decisions, better judgments, better choices. Now, I've only touched the surface today of how this aspect of the mind, this intuitive part, this analytical part. So next time I speak, I will get into a lot of depth on just exactly how we can accomplish approving better judgment, better choices by knowing and understanding and training our mind, both the intuitive part and the analytical part.